Good morning. I think it's still good morning. I'm Christine Charles, the other Christine. Delighted to be here today. I'm going to talk to you a bit about mining and what corporate responsibility might look like in our sector, and particularly focusing on environment and community, but at the end of the day, all of the themes are intertwined. Now, the Brundtland definition of sustainability has already been mentioned, but I do think, wherever you think it started, this notion of kind of intergenerational equity and sustainability is a really key part of thinking about sustainability for business. Business for a long time has actually worked out that communities are looking for balance. They're looking for a balance between the economic, social and environmental, and are trying to address the increasingly massive differentials across the globe. There's quite a lot of work now suggesting that there's a very mobile cohort of people that are taking advantage of globalisation, able to move and be involved, and geographically locked people who are often on the receiving end of less than positive outcomes. Human rights, and I'd have to say climate change, you might argue, is a really significant human right, have come to the forefront in how we do business. And all of this is underpinned by the speed of communication. So particularly for mining, that like to think of ourselves as sort of remote, you know, dark, dirty and hidden, it's often the case that if incidents happen at our mine sites in very remote parts of the world, often many parts of the spectator, as I might call it, world, like NGOs, may know about that before head office. Climate change has become a hook to put a whole lot of concerns about environmental impact and sustainability on. And I guess I'd argue that within the framework of climate change, access to arable land, potable water, and to economic resources or economic activity underpinning your social structure are going to, for this century, be the really big driving changes globally. Also, I think we are faced with a challenge of whether we take difference as something that we can build on or difference as something that divides our society. And I think if I look over a number of nations that we're involved in over the last few years, watching the politic of difference and people taking fairly short-term advantage of the fear that goes alongside not understanding people who work differently, live differently, appear to have different value sets, is something that we've got to come to terms with, because real productivity will embrace that difference. And all of us are under increasing scrutiny. I guess a fundamental question for me as I just talk about this issue is, we really believe that an economy can't flourish in the midst of social dislocation and social dysfunction. Now, it's probably more true for mining, perhaps, than other footloose industries. One of the things about miners is if you find an ore body, as much as you'd like to, you can't stick it on the back of a truck and take it somewhere else. You need to make it work wherever you find it, which means you need to address the social conditions that are existent before you actually start developing. I also, as a bit of a background, wanted to just briefly kind of touch on, in the Australian context, the dominance of our urban culture, and really pose a question of whether we have a public policy in the biggest sense that will deal with remote and rural, which is a theme that I'll come back to. Because as miners, we are really very much involved in a debate and a discussion with government and others about whether we really have a framework for taking the whole country forward, not only in a physical sense in terms of the environmental impacts, but really looking at the remote populations. And it's interesting to kind of think that at the moment, now I think the number's gone up, but the last census, 84% of the population in Australia live on 1% of the landmass, which is kind of an interesting thing to think about. And for those who are characterised as rural and remote, not regional but very rural, it's only 2.5% of the population, which is the same statistic that currently Indigenous Australians make of the population. So we've dominated by urban centres. If you live off the eastern seaboard, you think the Brisbane line is still alive and well, so anything over the other side of the mountains is kind of you'll give up. It may appear strange that miners are kind of grappling with these questions of civil society and sustainability, but as I've said, we've actually worked out that if you don't come to grips with what makes societies work and actually work out how to engage in a sustainable way, you don't have a business. So for us, one of the key things about remote and arid regions in Australia is a question we could really equally ask for the third world or developing world or however you put it. What is going to be the economic base that allows you to build social, political and cultural aspirations upon? Just very briefly, you'd hardly think of us as a poster child of kind of sustainability. The mining industry's got a pretty ordinary legacy. The World Bank Extractive Industries Review asked the really difficult question over the last few years of whether resource development across the globe actually led to an overall increase in prosperity. It certainly did for the First World that was extracting the resources, but a very difficult question for the developing economies. The result was that, like all colonisation, the development of resources is only one component, and largely it's the functioning or dysfunction of governance structures within communities that allow you to take benefit. Certainly for those communities involved, they have very much worked out that they get one chance to develop their resource. Now, we might have multiple resources around the globe, but for that community, if they don't get it right, not only is it at their cost, but the cost of their children. This ability of communities to then look at what are the things that they've got that are in their control, time and access to resources, access to land, access to kind of consent, are things that communities very much hold in their hands. And companies have actually worked out that if we don't manage the risk of that, then we can't get the access to the most basic commodity we need, which in the case of mining is, well, one of them is land. The industry, the financial industry, I don't think is ever going to give us scores for sustainability, but they will punish us for the inability to manage risk. And so I think the rise of the Equator Principle Banks, which are a group of banks that are really requiring projects to pass sustainability criteria, is a recognition of the need for management to come to terms with a proper understanding of risk, and on the other side, the opportunity that may come with getting it right. That then flows through to a whole range of things. The Global Compact and Reporting Initiative in our industry, really understanding risk management, the Global Mining Initiative, which was a kind of aha moment for some of the biggest players about a decade ago, and has now led to the International Council on Mining and Metals, which is really trying to struggle with what sustainability means. However we put it, and it is quite hard to find performance indicators that let you know what you should invest in, one of the things we do know is that failure is extremely costly. Our own company has had to put on hold for, and I think it'll probably take another 5 years, a $6 million ounce deposit in Peru that had been fully permitted by the government, but we actually have handed the permits back because we got the community engagement so wrong and didn't deal with fears about water and water safety, in spite of the fact it wasn't even the main water catchment. And so we know when we get it wrong, it actually costs a lot. And to be quite honest, I mean, my view is that even if we're still struggling with the lead indicators, being able to cogently point to the indicators that actually show what happens when you don't address this is pretty powerful. We know we've got economic influence. We know that societies that function work best. And we think there's a strong convergence of interest between societies and between business. I'm really strongly of the view that this is not philanthropic. I work for a publicly listed company. If I can't mount a business reason why we're spending shareholders' money on what we're doing, I probably shouldn't be doing it. And from a board of directors' perspective, I think there's a fiduciary duty to actually just face up to the fact that there's a business reason you do this. It's not to say, and in fact, quite frankly, engaging the Generation Y people or any of the other sort of feel-good elements of it have a very sound business case. We also know in mining we do have an impact. I'm not going to stand here and say we don't leave, you know, dig big holes in the ground, that we're not going to have an environmental impact. The question is, does the balance of what we impact on work with the social change and create benefits that are really shared? The other big challenge for us is that I think intellectually our industry really gets it, to use a term that Jeff didn't want to use, but one of the really big problems we've got is a huge gap between understanding where we need to go and the internal capacity. We talk a lot about communities not having capacity. The fact is, within corporates at a senior management level and right through, we don't always have the core competencies that allow us to know what we have to do to change our behaviours and culture and operating mode. And I just very briefly wanted to touch, there's a program that is not running now, but Oxfam ran with BHP and Newmont joined, which took groups of executives to India for 2 or 3 weeks to meet with villagers. And the thing that really struck me with very disempowered groups, and I'd have to say the Indian mining industry is not exactly what I'd call leading practice in some of these areas, and the level of anger and sort of disenfranchisement you got, the list of issues really similar anywhere around the world, access to water, access to education, the role of women, fear, all of that still didn't change the fact that these people really want a future for their children, and resource development is part of that future. it's not whether you develop resources, it's probably the time frame and how it's done. And I think for us as an industry, that is really the corporate responsibility challenge. In Australia, there's a whole range of things that you'd find in our industry that are trying to respond to this: skilled shortages, a very big gender, as in women and mining, process that's running, much to my surprise, I have to say, wildly embraced by the Minerals Council board, and against my better judgment, I'm currently chairing that, so I'm looking for a bloke who'd like to take it over. So if there are any kind of volunteers from mining, I'm happy to talk to you. I actually think men should push women's issues. Indigenous and First Nations issues, understanding that the very strong safety culture we've got needs to extend beyond the mine gate to the community. Social skills development, understanding water and the importance of that in the Australian landscape, on and on. As I've already said, our struggles are around our own capacity. We've made very strong commitments to sustainable development. How do you operationalise that? And the reality is, what do you think it means? If you're serious about it, as we are with any part of our business, we should be able to build competencies, we should have systems that track it, we should understand how we invest in it, and we should try and build some measures of outcomes. Now, I'd have to say, having spent a lot of time in government, governments are not particularly good at measuring these things either, so I think we set the benchmark pretty high for corporates. But it does pose a real technical problem for us, and one that I'd really challenge people who work in this sector to appeal less to people's hearts and start really appealing to the head and the kind of technical side of this debate. In our company, it's led us to be involved in things you might not expect that we'd be involved in, and global AIDS strategy, which is a lot about workforce sustainability, but it's meant that we've actually taken on stigma and a whole lot of issues around it. It's found us moving a 1,000-ton, 100-year-old Cornish pump house in New Zealand from the edge of the pit, or put, being it's in New Zealand, 300 metres to the edge of town, which was not just about stopping a historic item falling into the bottom of the pit and becoming a dive site, but was really has become a key spur for economic development in Waihi, and has brought a massive investment from a private New Zealand mint in a gold discovery centre that would not have happened. And we are the main game in Waihi. When we leave, what's there? In Indigenous Australia, we've had a kind of crossover with the aspirations of Indigenous Australians to be part of the mainstream economy on their terms, and our need to understand that we need access to land, we actually need regional employees. You think attracting people into your industries is hard. You should try fly in, fly out in very remote locations. It's something that we know we've got to become more competitive at, and Indigenous Australians are a really key focus for us, not just for questions of getting access to a resource they've got, but really building our own ability to keep going as a business. We know that we come off a pretty bad base. I mean, as a country, we don't exactly have a shining sort of base. We know that racism's still alive and well. We know that mining in particular, if you go back to the 90s and the Mabo debate, didn't cover itself in glory in terms of leadership. I think we now find ourselves really building incredible bridges with Indigenous communities. And again, our experience is largely that most communities, with the exclusion of very sacred areas, are not anti-development. They're anti-development that happens in a way that is either inappropriate from a social or cultural or environmental way. For young people in the future, this is part of their future legacy. We've found ourselves, as an industry, signing up to a memorandum of understanding with the Commonwealth, and that's a whole other talk we could give about the role of government and trying to push that on to the private sector. We have, through this MOU, a national push now to actually think about what is the role of government in remote Australia. Who should provide basic education, health services? We find ourselves influencing and lobbying government for jobs in our industry, but really it's about sustainable regional communities. And interestingly, from an Indigenous point of view, you've now got the growth of things like the Aboriginal Enterprises in Mining and Exploration, which has now become an organisation looking at commercial opportunities for Indigenous people in mining. A whole raft, I'm sure you'll get a copy of this, of international things that I could have talked on in a similar way, which is about us struggling with sustainability, Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, anti-corruption, human rights. But I guess the big questions are, how do we actually work with communities to understand their aspirations? And how do we actually operationalise sustainable development? In doing that, how do we build a really cogent business case that's already been talked about this morning? And part of that business case is recognising the lack of skills, not just in companies, not just in communities, but actually in government too. For us, and I'd say academe, I don't have academe there, but it was sort of mentioned the struggle that some academics have with you know, how they see big business. And I guess lacking across that is an absolute lack of coordination and cohesion and shared visions. So if we get all that right, last slide, we think it's about managing risk. We think it's about getting permitted timely. This is very much our industry's view and Newmont's view, attracting and keeping the right people. We want to be a company that people choose to have as part of their communities. And we actually think a reputation is a bankable commodity. All of that, we think, and this is sort of mining in the snow, will actually deliver for us corporate responsibility and hopefully a sustainable business framework. Thank you.